Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathleen O, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, June 8th, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we're on page 8, the fourth paragraph that begins with, "My musing was interrupted by the telephone," ending in, "Drinkers are like that." We'll be reading and commenting on this one paragraph only. Today's readers are Juanice N., who will be reading the 12 steps, Janet E. will be reading the 12 traditions, and the readers of our text are Christina M., Dion R., and Leslie M. The share ID for Tuesday, June 7th, the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 19,042. That's 19042. And this morning's Wednesday, June 8th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, share ID is 19,049. 19049. Our newcomer greeter for today is Lois P., and Robin P. will be making the announcements. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I'll now ask Juanice N. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Juanice.
Good morning. My name is Juanice N., Southern California, recovered compulsive overeater. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you so much, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Juanice N. And Janet E., if you'd read the 12 traditions, please.
Hi, good morning. Janet E., compulsive overeater from Idaho. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group, conscious. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose: carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you, Janet E. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And today we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 8, the fourth paragraph. My musing was interrupted by the telephone, ending with drinkers are like that. And we'll be reading and commenting on this one paragraph only. And good morning, Christina M. If you could get us started, please.
Thank you, Kathleen. Good morning, everyone. I'm Christina M., compulsive overeater in Massachusetts. And this is page 8, paragraph 4 of Bill's story. My musing was interrupted by the telephone. The cheery voice of an old school friend asked if he might come over. He was sober. It was years since I could remember his coming to New York in that condition. I was amazed. Rumor had it that he had been committed for alcoholic insanity. I wondered how he had escaped. Of course he would have dinner, and then I could drink openly with him. Unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. There was that time we had chartered an airplane to complete a jag. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. The very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. Wow. Hi, everyone. Again, I'm Christina M., compulsive overeater in Massachusetts, and thanks, Kathleen, for moderating and everyone doing service on this meeting. So there's so much in this paragraph that I identify with and in all of Bill's story, but the thing that really sticks out to me this morning is starting out with the cheery voice of an old friend. And to me, this means that Bill, as a real alcoholic, recognizes something different in his friend's voice before he even sees him in person. And as I understand it, this is his old school friend and drinking buddy, Ebby Thatcher, who Bill has heard was committed for alcoholic insanity and hasn't shown up in New York in this condition, in a sober condition, in many years. And yet here he was on the telephone, sober. And that's in italics. He was sober, which we know by now is very important. Anything in this book that's in italics, I'm supposed to pay attention to. And so somehow his friend, someone who drinks just like Bill, and maybe who's even, in Bill's mind, maybe even a little bit worse off, is sober. And this gets Bill's attention. And what this makes me think of is, what did it take to get my attention in this program in OA? And it makes me think of when I came back to OA after a very long relapse in 2020. I encountered something that I had not experienced before in these rooms, and that was in this meeting in particular, and in others, meetings I was able to attend because of Zoom. I encountered OA fellows who also embodied this cheery voice of an old friend. And I heard people starting, you know, I heard people sharing who identified as not only as abstinent, but being happy about it. And this was the first time I had ever heard anybody identify as recovered from compulsive overeating. And I could hear, without even seeing these people, I could hear something different in their voices. And I could hear, you know, from their stories that they were real compulsive overeaters, just like me, you know, people who ate just like I did, who felt as broken as I did, and yet they were abstinent and they were happy. And you know, they talked of having neutrality toward food, something which I had never experienced and I could only dream of. And I didn't believe it was possible. So for me, this paragraph, just that one sentence kind of embodies how important it was for me to hear from another compulsive overeater that they had found a way out, you know, that there's something, I'm a real compulsive overeater and I can hear it in someone's voice. Like, and you know, as we go ahead, we'll see that, you know, he encounters it when he sees Ebby in person. And I'll just wrap with that. I'm really grateful to be here and look forward to hearing everybody else. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Christina M. in Massachusetts. Okay, we're on page 8, the fourth paragraph. My musing was interrupted by the telephone. Ending in drinkers are like that. And although we do value your experience, we ask you limit your share to every third day in order that others may share their experience too. So who would like to share on this paragraph?
Deb E.
Wendy B.
Okay, Wendy B. And who came in before Wendy?
Barbara.
Deb E.
Okay, I heard someone with an E, and I think I heard Barbara.
Yes, Barbara E.
Oh, Barbara E. Okay, and was there a third person in there?
No, Barbara S.
Barbara S.
It was
Barbara E.
Deb E.
And Deb E.
Veronica
okay.
B.
Veronica B.
Donna B.
Who came in after Donna B?
Carla C.
Carla?
Mm-hmm.
Carla C. Okay, let's
yeah.
stop there. So I think I have this. Barbara E., Barbara S., Wendy B., Deborah E., Veronica B., Donna B., Carla C. Okay, go ahead, please, Barbara E. And if it wasn't Barbara E., maybe it was Barbara S.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, hi, I'm Barbara S. I'm from New York and grateful to be on this meeting this morning. Today is day 3 for me, back from relapse. And this paragraph, and of course the whole book, gives me hope. You know, just knowing so many people, specifically here we're talking about Ebby, who was really down there, recovered. You know, when I'm into this relapse, I sort of felt hopeless. It comes with a whole package deal, not only of eating, but depression and disgusted and angry. And I don't use the word happy. I use the word comfortable with life. Comfortable with life. And these meetings and this program reminds me that it's possible. I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara S. in New York. And Wendy B., you're up, followed by Debbie.
Good morning. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. And, you know, where it says, his coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. And, you know, so he was still drinking, but it had lost its power to make him feel good. You know, it had lost its magic to give him a high. And he was feeling the futility and the pointlessness of his existence. And, you know, he needed something more, you know, to lift his spirit, to recapture the good times, you know, that his drinking used to give him. And he thought his old drinking buddy, you know, was just the ticket he needed, you know. And he said, drinkers are like that, you know, always looking for the next external thing to bring us you know, relief from the monotony of our life, you know. And it's really telling of his selfishness too when he said, unmindful of his welfare. You know, he thought only of his next good feeling, you know, what his friend could do for him, you know, what he could get out of the occasion. You know, and as addicts, you know, we're so self-absorbed, you know, that we need this spiritual transformation that this program gives us so we can actually understand what it means to be self-sacrificing, you know, and concerned with another person's welfare, you know, so we can get to the place of even having something to bring to an occasion, you know, and, you know, to be freed from our self-absorption and greed for more for ourselves, you know, and God does this, you know, miraculous transformation in us, you know, and we become recovered and neutral around the food. And we also become able to help others. You know, we actually want to help others and give away what we were so freely given, you know, what we received from this program. And that's all I have. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Wendy B. in Arizona. And Deborah E., you're up, followed by Veronica B.
Hi, thank you. It's Deb E., recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. And this first sentence really caught my attention, how he was interrupted by the telephone. I remember that happening often to me at first, like somehow the phone would ring right when I was, you know, soon after discovering OA and, you know, still being in the food and binging. And the phone would ring and just like ruin my moment. And then as time progressed, the phone would just have this way of ringing when I needed help. And I really feel like it was my higher power reaching out to me in different ways. But I remember in particular, the very first sponsor I had, actually I had just met her. It was soon after my first meeting where I had met her. And I had just been telling my husband how much I was struggling. And then the phone rang. And it was her, and but I wouldn't tell her that I was struggling. And I remember him listening to the conversation, like he heard what I was saying, and he was kind of mouthing to me, like, "Why don't you tell her?" Or I think I actually got off the phone. He's like, "Why didn't you just tell her you need help?" And I just, it was just still so hard to ask for help. And then I did call her back and ask her to be my sponsor. But it's interesting because the telephone has been helpful in a lot of ways, but in this way of thinking of it as an interruption, I have that experience too of it being helpful like that. And I just also wanted to share quickly on the words, I was amazed, because I was amazed and very skeptical when I heard people talking about how they no longer ate sugar or chocolate. I thought they were lying. I thought it was impossible to live life without those substances. And now, of course, I've seen for myself how it's not impossible, but I really, I thought it was just too unbelievable. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Debbie in Israel. And Veronica B., it is your turn, followed by Donna B.
Good morning. I'm Veronica, recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic in California. And thank you, Kathleen, for your service. It's great to be on the line today. I like where it talks about, you know, Bill gets his call and he hears a cheery voice. And at this point, Bill is not doing well. You know, he has hit his bottom. He's lonely. He turns to alcohol as a solution. Alcohol is his master. So when he hears that his friend is coming over, he's thinking, oh, hey, I'm going to get to drink with the old buddy. What a relief, you know? But then he discovers that his friend is sober, and he hears that his friend's not doing very well. And for me, you know, Ebby shows up as a different person. And for me, that is the attraction that keeps me coming back in these rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. I believe in a higher power because I see him working through in your guys' lives. I see how happy you guys are. I see how comfortable you are in your own skin. I see your enthusiasm for this way of living. And for me, that is the biggest example that I need. I don't need a doctor telling me to lose weight. You know, I need to see somebody else go through the same struggles that I had with food, the same powerlessness that I have with food, and only you guys can reach me in a way that nobody else can reach me. And this is what Ebby does for Bill. Ebby's going to show Bill that there is a different way to live, that there is a way out. You know, because for me, Overeaters Anonymous is a way out for me. My higher power has restored me to sanity. The fellowship of this program keeps me in the middle. You know, the middle is my happy place. And this way of life is just so beautiful. I didn't think that I could be this comfortable in my own skin without the food ever. I never thought that I'd be able to get one day without eating and throwing up, because I ate and threw up for 15 years. And today, I don't even think about it when I have a bad day. It's the, you know, I think about God and more God, or at least I try, you know, because I am human and I do get into fear, but I know immediately what to do. I immediately go to God, immediately see who I can help, because I cannot afford resentment or fear. And so this is exciting. We're going to hear about how Ebby gets to touch Bill's life with his example, with his demonstration of his how he's living sober and he's happy. So thank you for letting me share, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you, Veronica B. in California. And Donna B., you are up, followed by Carla C. Go ahead, Donna.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, calling from Denver. I do spell my name V-A-N-A, even though it's pronounced Donna. And it's always amazing to me that no matter how many times I've been through the big book, I hear something new. And this morning what I heard was that Bill was curious about how Ebby was able to escape the asylum. He was interested in how Ebby was able to escape the consequences of his drinking. He doesn't say there that he's interested in how Ebby got sober or how Ebby's, you know, what he hears in his voice. He says he's curious about how Ebby escaped the asylum. And that is exactly where I was for so many years. I was interested in escaping the consequences of binge eating and purging, of binge eating and exercise bulimia and laxatives and indigestion and stomach pain and sleeping on the bathroom floor and the weight gain and the yo-yo dieting and the aches and pains in my body from all of the over-exercising. So the ideas that appealed to me, that drew my attention, were around being free of the consequences of my behavior. The idea that I could actually be free from the bondage of food and weight obsession didn't even occur to me, didn't even strike me as a possibility, let alone a life of happiness and freedom. So it just struck me, it's just so amazing how, as an addict like myself, right, I just wanted to escape the consequences. You know, when I won't go there, but there are just so many consequences that if I could get away with, if it was possible to eat without the consequences, maybe that's something I would choose. It's certainly something I fantasize about. But for today, I understand that that isn't one of the options. There are two options: the miserable death or the spiritual life. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna B. in Colorado. And before we take you, Carla, I just want to remind everyone that we're on page 8, the fourth paragraph, My musing was interrupted by the telephone, ending in drinkers are like that. And I'll be taking some more names after Carla. So go ahead, please, Carla.
Thank you. So great to be here today. So grateful. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in California. And I love what it says that he was interrupted by the telephone. And yesterday I was praying for friends to call me. And my husband's out of town for 3 weeks. And it was such a blessing to hear from friends, you know, with happy voices on the other end, you know. And I was telling them that I'm looking for things to do that I haven't done in a long time, or that I, you know, have put aside. And dancing came to me, and my sponsor said, you know, maybe tap dancing, because I love to dance. So I don't know. It's just incredible what we can do when we're abstinent, you know, and the food's not controlling us anymore. And, you know, I'm thinking of others and how I can be of service, and just really grateful for this program. So thanks for letting me claim my seat today. I'm Carla in California. Thanks.
Thank you, Carla C. in California. Okay, who else would like to share on this fourth paragraph on page 8 who hasn't shared in the last 3 days?
Larry G.
Larry G.
Christy M.
Christy M.
Dion R.
Anyone else? Dion R.
Elaine B.
Okay. Elaine B. And we'll stop there for now. So Larry G, Christy M, Dion R, and Elaine B. And if you could say the state you're calling from, that would be great. So good morning, Larry. Go ahead.
Good morning, family. Larry G from California. The thing I'm most grateful for, Vision, is it has rekindled my love of the Big Book and studying in a specific way where we break each paragraph down each day. And this paragraph is so powerful because this is the beginning of our legacy. This is before conferences and retreats, the Big Book, 12 by 12, 10-step train, 11-step train, specific meetings, special meetings. This is before all of that. One drunk sitting down and talking to another. A recovered drunk talking to a drunk who is in the throes of his disease. Boy, the last thing I wanted to do before I got to Vision was to sit down and have lunch with a normal eater or a recovered member in OA. I did not want to sit down with somebody who had a healthy relationship with food, because who wants to do that when you're eating several meringue pies at one sitting, or two or three pizzas, or a half of a cake? It's just the sheets are pulled, you know, the covers are pulled, and you're sitting in front of somebody. They're mirroring what you know you need to do. But when that person comes calling, and I had someone who did that, came calling, was worried about me. There is nothing more precious, I think, than one drunk talking to another. Where doctors couldn't reach me, ex-wives couldn't reach me, children who were shocked, adult children were shocked at their father, how his father was destroying himself with food. None of that ever could take for me. Maybe it does for other people, but for me, I would just listen and pay lip service to it and go back to compulsive eating, destroying myself with food. But when you have one drunk sitting across the table, a recovered drunk talking to another, it's life-giving. That person's not lecturing you. There's no axes to grind. There's no lectures to endure. There's no belittling. It's that recovered drunk sharing their experience, strength, and hope, and telling the truth. And how can you defend against the truth? Especially when you have an ex-bullshitter talking to a bullshitter, right? You can't bullshit a bullshitter. And that happened for me prior to coming to Visions. I actually met a recovered vision person who was my Ebbie. I couldn't argue. I could not argue what this person was sharing. And so this is our legacy. This is the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it has been the contribution that has been made to Overeaters Anonymous. And thank you, I pass.
Thank you, Larry G. in California. And Christy M., you're up, followed by Dion R.
Good morning. This is Christy M., recovering bulimic, anorexic, and overeater from Portland, Oregon. This passage makes me think of a couple of things. I think the first is just about the 12th step. And I haven't read this whole story, but I think it just shows the power of carrying our message. And I think what's interesting is the person doesn't call Bill and is like, hey, Bill, let me tell you about this 12-step program, or let me tell you how I got sober, right? Like, he doesn't call and evangelize about sobriety. He just calls and asks them, like, to hang out. And, you know, I think it's tempting to tell people when you know that you have somebody that's still suffering, but we talk about this program being about attraction and not promotion, right? Like, the message is not trying to evangelize and tell people what to do or tell people where to go. It's really to do outreach and to show up to people who are still suffering. And, like, that's the 12th step. That's the outcome of our recovery. Our outcome of our recovery isn't for us to go off on our own and, you know, just be happy that we're doing better. It is to be reaching out to those who are still suffering and giving them message of hope, and it's by promotion. And so I think that's an important message. I know for me, you know, being and working with newcomers and hearing newcomers is important for my recovery too, because I'm going to be 2 years abstinent from binging and purging this summer. And it's easy sometimes, like when I'm in a hurry, to be like, oh, I can just, you know, not measure this. I can just kind of wing it and get complacent in my recovery, you know. And being and working with newcomers reminds me of, you know, it also keeps me humble of remembering, you know, my insanity and remembering my suffering, and how, you know, the working with a newcomer or working with somebody who's still suffering from the disease is beneficial for both. And that's such an important aspect of our recovery. And I know even with my eating disorder, it started with a group of other girls in high school who were all doing it together. And, you know, a lot of them didn't make it out of it. But just like what a powerful thing that is to have a new dynamic. And what's interesting about Bill is, like, he can't even fathom, you know, an interaction or a social interaction with this person without, like, getting drunk, right? He wants to relive his glory days. And, like, he just can't even understand what this world of recovery is, or even understand that this person wouldn't do that or might not want that. And it brings me back to that place of, you know, where my life was and being unmanageable, of not really being able to imagine, you know, a life that wasn't centered around food. Like, he can't even imagine that. He can't even set up a social interaction with this person or envision a world where, you know, drinking, thank you, I'll wrap up, isn't the center of that interaction. So with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Christy M. in Oregon. And Dion R., you're up, followed by Elaine B.
Yes. Good morning, everyone. My name is Dion R., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater, and from a seemingly hopelessness state of mind and body. I guess what I want to share before my voice went out is the part I was amazed, as many people said, coming in, you know, seeing a recovered person, and seeing them coming into the rooms, and when they sit in the 80s, 90s, where they used to pass pictures around the room of before and after, and oh my God, it was that That was a mute. I was amazed, and I was a mute. I was like, wow, that's that same person. So seeing the visual proof really helped me get my capture my interest. And also being exposed to the 12-step program through another program, I knew what the 12 steps could do for me. So I was open to that. But and another thing that stuck out to me is when he said his comedy was an oasis, you know, and to me, an oasis is that sense of ease and comfort. I don't want to hear about how tired I am. I don't want to hear how I could just push away from the table. I don't want to hear about how your sister so slim or your brother. I don't need to hear that. I just want to just, you know, hang with some people that can tell me, let's have, we can sneak and eat. You know, I did all the diets with everyone else on jobs, and we would lose the weight. Some would lose it and kept it off, you know. I knew every time I was going to go back, and I always felt bad. But coming into Overeaters Anonymous and hearing people share their experience, strength, and hope gave me hope to keep trudging, keep doing it. And also, his coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. And to me, like feeling uselessness, after I kept trying over and over and over, I felt useless. I felt like, what's the use even trying? You know, pointlessness. I felt that was like, I'll never get it, and until I did, and I just never stopped, and I was open, and I had to open that closed mind. It's like, how's 12 steps going to read them? Whatever, it's not going to do it, but I just thought I was different. You, Overeaters Anonymous, allow me to see that I'm not different. I'm not unique when it comes to this disease. All I had to do is follow these simple rules. And today I am recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, not on my own. And I thank my higher power and all of you for that. And with that, thanks for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Dion R. in Ohio. And I'll be able to take some more names after Elaine. Just a reminder, we're on page 8, the fourth paragraph. My musing was interrupted by the telephone. Ending in drinkers are like that. So go ahead, please, Elaine B. Good morning.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thank you for your service. So, boy, unmindful of his welfare, I thought of only recapturing the spirit of other days. And, you know, how we can look back with longing on, you know, if you got a vacation coming up, oh, I can go to that place, that ice cream stand. Oh, I remember that. They called it the spot. I can't wait to be there again. Or that restaurant. Or I had a binge buddy. I had two binge buddies, actually. And but one really wasn't a food addict, but the other one really was. And we would travel and we would go different places. And so much of it was about, you know, what we were going to eat when we got there. And, you know, won't it be exciting and won't it be wonderful? And, oh, my goodness. And, you know, I had someone ask me to marry him. And so I'm like, I'm not wearing a size 20, 26 wedding gown. So that was my impetus to really get into the program and really, you know, start the way of life and a food plan and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, and this person was there when I was, you know, at the shower. And, but I wasn't eating like that and I wasn't going out. We weren't going to those places anymore. And, I remember not long after I got married, learning that she had died. And, this is a really, really cunning, baffling, and powerful disease. And those people who are sober that can carry the message, it's incredible. Years later, I got into a really, really bad relapse, and it was just so awful. I just didn't even know what to do except for to come back to the rooms of OA. I decided to do 90 meetings in 90 days. And right in the middle of that, I met somebody who gave me the number for Vision for You in 2013. The first meeting I heard, they said it was titled, they call this plain insanity. And that woman talked about how I ate, my relationship with food. And that's what I need to hear. That's what I needed to hear. And then on the next day, I heard somebody say, we used to get our ease and comfort from food. Now we get our ease and comfort from God. And that's what they want. You know, that's what I wanted. I wanted to feel good. I wanted to have fun. I wanted to enjoy life, you know. But I didn't know I could do that without Ben and Jerry or M&M. I just had no idea that that was even possible again for me. And so with the desperation of a dying man that I really needed to work these steps, like my hair was on fire. And, you know, we hear that a lot. I've been through the steps several times since then. We really get to grow through these steps. But the main thing is we find that there really is a solution. We can have sanity around food, whether we are hanging out with M&M, just not eating, and or going to the spot on a vacation, but just not having an ice cream cone, or being with those binge buddies and friends, that we can enjoy them. But it's not about the food. It's not about the alcohol. It's not about, thank you very much, what we're consuming. So glad to be doing with it with you all, and I pass.
Thank you, Elaine B. in Massachusetts. Okay, if you haven't shared in the last 3 days and you'd like to share on this fourth paragraph on page 8, I will take your name.
Joan R.
Joan R.
April B.
April B.
B.
Was there a name that just came in after April B?
John P.
John P. Okay, let's stop there. So Joan R., April B., and John P. So go ahead, please, Joan R.
Hi, this is Joan R., recovered in Oregon. And I was looking up the word musing, and the word is I'll just read it because it's pretty, the way these things are written is just amazing. It says, it's any one of nine sister goddesses of learning and the arts in Greek myth. And it says that a source of inspiration. So as he's looking back and writing this, you know, Evie was a source for inspiration. And the way this reads, like, you know, wondering how he escaped. Of course, we would, you know, do things my way. I mean, that's, you know, they have the drinks, and it was like Evie was light and Bill was darkness, and he couldn't even think of any other a way out. He was at the bottom, and it's where we mostly have to go, although the big book says that we can get there sooner if we're willing to stop what we're doing and to accept the simple directions and follow them the way the big book says and do what our sponsor suggests, and we'll be delivered from the oasis of a, you know, desert of futility, and describes it so well. So with that, I'll pass, and thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Joan R. in Oregon. And April B., you're up, followed by John P. Go ahead, April.
Hi, this is April B. from Richmond, Virginia, grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater. And I feel every sentence of this paragraph, literally every line. And I had a similar experience to what Bill's talking about here. You know, so he's got childhood, you know, good friend who has been committed, been to an institution, is now sober, and he's thinking, wow, that never happens. And great, he'll be here and we can drink openly. Even though he's sober, he recognizes that he's sober. It doesn't occur to him that he might want to stay that way. He's just thinking, we're going to drink. And the person who 12-stepped me into OA in the first place so many years ago took me out to dinner or lunch, and we had a conversation. She told me about, you know, her experience, and, you know, she was a 100-pounder and all this sort of stuff, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she got to the end, what do you think? And I was like, I'm so glad that worked out for you. That's great. And, wow, do you mind if I have dessert? Is that okay? Can I have dessert? And I then proceeded to have dessert. And, you know, the selfishness, the self-centeredness of the disease that says, I have to feed this disease. I have to feed the addiction. no matter what it costs me and now to anyone else. And I mean, you know, they had gotten quite personal and told me, you know, details about how horrible it felt to be, you know, in the disease. And I was so deep in it that I was disconnected from feelings, and all I knew was feeding the disease. And I'm so grateful to not be in that place, to have, you know, gained enough recovery to be able to focus on being of service to others in any given situation. And it's a real gift. It's a gift that I could only get from a higher power, and only wanted to get because of this program. And I'll pass. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, April B. in Virginia. And John P., go ahead, please.
Hi, everybody. I'm John P. I'm a compulsive overeater in Colorado. And it's just such a pleasure to hear, for me, the connection between the paragraph we read and just being on this call and being reminded of some of the ways that I get a lot of recovery. I just have so much gratitude today for this meeting and for everyone who's, I know these meetings take a lot of work, and for everyone who's making them possible, but I also know that service is, that service is what, you know, for me is like a huge part of my recovery. And, you know, I'm listening to this story about Bill and Ebby, and I'm like, well, am I more like Bill right now, or am I more like Ebby? And I'm definitely feeling more like Bill these days. I've been abstinent, but I've just had a really tough couple of months, and I think I'm only just now starting to pick up program tools to just deal with life on life's terms, I guess. And it's been hard. It's been a hard stretch for me. But, you know, today I prayed. I asked God to just help me be really present today and to just enjoy all the blessings I have around me. And that's what I feel like I get to do right now. And it's such a, you know, it's a real challenge for me when we have these meetings with the format like this one, where we stay focused only on the paragraph. It's hard for me to stay focused on the present. It's something I have to sort of devote a lot of energy to. But I know that when I do that, there's a lot more recovery there. And the thing that I notice is that I get connected to how my body actually feels instead of how I wish things felt, or what my fantasy, which is usually kind of delusional anyway, what my fantasy of a better life might look like. And so I'm really grateful. I mean, I just feel like I really needed some help in standing in my own shoes, as my sponsor says, just being here and listening to this story and identifying really with all of it, with Bill, with Ebby making the outreach call, and then getting to hear a bunch of people on the phone working recovery. So I just really needed that today, and it's just such a gift to hear y'all. So thanks a lot, and I'll mute.
Thank you, John P. in Colorado, and thank you everyone who shared this morning. Really some really wonderful shares, all of you. Okay, we're going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So Dion R., if you please read a vision for you.
Uh-huh. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own health is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact. for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And I'll pass.